you came in spite of the time change and the weather to hear our speakers today. And by the way, it's sure good to see Dale and Judy Schneider from Oklahoma. They live in a part of Oklahoma that very recently was specified by Woodward, Oklahoma, almost got burned up. So we're glad that you're safe, and we miss you always when you're not here. Last Sunday, I preached on the doctrine of providence. I could have taken the life story of Jack Scott. I want you to imagine this. Jack Scott was born and reared in Sweetwater, Texas, best known for its rattlesnakes and windmills now. But he spent his whole growing up years in that small West Texas town. And if you can imagine, how is God going to arrange for this boy from Sweetwater to be a senator in the state of California? And it's an interesting story. He was president of Abilene Christian College when my sister was a freshman. And as a senior, he was on the lookout for a wife. And he spotted her, and she was very pretty, very smart. And she was pursued by many of the Jack Scott and Sweetwater wonder over. They were married for 66 years until she died. And I'm forever grateful that though she had difficulties in the last few years of her life, her husband was always by her side and care of her. Well, Jack and Frieda got married in 1955. And he was working for Abilene Christian College at the time. Then they decided he wanted to preach, and he wanted to do mission work. And so he chose New Haven, Connecticut as the place to go. And he preached there for maybe 5 years. While he was there, they built a church building, and the church grew. And after he was there for a couple of years, he decided to pursue a degree from Yale University. And he got his master's in religious studies out of Yale. When he graduated with that, our colleges wanted him to come back and be a teacher. He could have gone to Oklahoma Christian College. But Pepperdine University appealed to him, and so they went to California, and they taught in the Bible department at Pepperdine. When Malibu campus was started, they had seen his administrative fellows and made them provost of the Pepperdine Los Angeles campus. Then along the way, Jack decided that he would like to pursue his profession as an educator in the secular colleges in California. And he served in that capacity for several colleges. Finally, getting a call to be president of Pasadena City College, which is kind of a famous community college in California, they sponsored the Rose Bowl, And also, that's where Jackie Robbins played baseball. That broke the barrier in professionals. After Jack decided to retire, citizens of Pasadena, California approached him about running for political office. That was a big decision for him to make. I told him he shouldn't do it. And so, of course, he did. And he won, beat the incumbent, and won several elections to the House Assembly, as it's called in California. Then the Senate position became open, and he ran and was elected as the California Senator. Because of his experiences in education, he was put in charge of the educational budget, which in California amounts to billions of dollars. They are responsible for the spending of money for education from kindergarten all the way to university. California has term limits, and so Jack was elected so many times, and then he had to just quit because of term limits. Even though they were of different political persuasion, Governor Schwarzenegger admired Jack's work so much that when Jack had to retire from the Senate, he put him as chancellor over all the community colleges of California, which numbered over 100 different campuses. So that's how a boy from Sweetwater gets to be senator. I never know exactly how to introduce him. He had so many times. Dr. Scott. That's best reserved for restaurants where you get faster seating if you thank your doctor. Senator Scott, that sounds so formal. I'll just call him what I've called him since 1955, Jack Scott. And I know you'll enjoy hearing your message for today.
Thanks.
One other thing, most important, in all these experiences, Jack remained preaching in California. You know, there's some politicians who talk about their religious life and belief, but Jack has preached at Sierra Madre Church of Christ in California for over 50 years. I've been here 49. When you get our family, you get there for a long time.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. I'm not sure I can live up to those things that you said about me, but I'd like to carry you around with me to introduce me at other places. He does such a great job. And anyway, I'm always pleased to be here. I've known Alan longer than anybody in this audience, even longer than Mikey, because I did court this wonderful wife of mine, and I ended up in the Isabel home. And at that time, Alan was a high school student. And so the romance continued, and I got married, and we were blessed with 5 children. And we really had a wonderful life. And so I would often, with my wife, visit the Broadway Church and know the great work that Alan and Mikey have done here. So I'm always pleased when he asked me to preach a sermon, and I can throw all the messages together and get through it pretty easily. I want to start this morning with 2 scriptures. And there are scriptures that deal with the term steward. One was written by Paul when he said, "Let a man so consider as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required of a steward to be found faithful." And then over in Peter writes, "As such has received a gift, employ it for another as good stewards of God's grace." So one speaks as a servant of God, whoever renders service as one who renders it by the strength which God supplies. So he too applies to Christians as being good stewards. Well, what is a steward? A steward is what I might call like a manager. The steward has lots of responsibilities he oversees, but he's not the owner. And so he serves maybe for a specific period of time. Alan mentioned that I was at one time president of Pasadena City College. I was a steward. I didn't own the college. I answered to a board of trustees. I realized that I had a lot of responsibilities in overseeing many faculty members and individuals who were working there in the college, but I was a steward. And often Jesus would view us as stewards of God. And I want to think about that a little bit. I want you to think about the fact that you are God's steward, and God oversees you. That is your career, to be a steward, a servant, or a manager. And I'm going to mention three different ways in which you are to be a steward. The first of these is one that might come immediate to your mind because it's one of the duties of a steward, and that is you're stewards of your material possessions. And Jesus tells us a story. Jesus happened to be in a crowd, and somebody held up his hand, and he said, "I want you to take care of a quarrel between me and my brother. I want him to give me a certain portion of the inheritance." And Jesus said, "No, that's not my business." In fact, he turned to him and he said, "You know, really, the secret of a man is not the things that he possesses." And then he launched into a parable, as Jesus was prone to do. Jesus could tell a story, a beautiful story that illustrated the point. And here was a story that he told about someone who was a steward. He was a farmer. And a rather successful farmer, I might point out. He was rich. And one day he had wonderful crops. And he said, "I don't have any place to store these crops. But I'll tell you what I will do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger barns. And then I'll say, 'Soul, take thine ease, and I will eat and drink and be merry.'" And God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul is required of you. And this abundance that you now have, whose will they be?" Now, maybe you are saying, "Well, I'm not like the rich farmer in the sense that I have more goods than I know what to do with." But every one of us have been granted amount of material possessions. And it seems like we think that they are ours. We own them. But the reality is that that isn't true. There's a short story written by Leo Tolstoy. He was a great 19th century writer in Russia. And here's the story he told. He titled his short story, "How Much Land Does a Man Need?" And there was a peasant who had a plot of land, but it was always a little greedy. He wanted more land, more land. And he heard of a place where there was an opportunity where you could circle a certain amount of land, and once you circled that land, you would have it. And this was a very wonderful plot of land, and so he was very excited about it. But there was a little asterisk that went with that. You could only take the land that you circled. And if you didn't get back to the starting place, you wouldn't get any of it. Well, he starts out in the morning, and he had pretty much plotted the amount of land that he would do. But once in a while, he saw some things that he hadn't seen before. There was a wonderful period plot there that had some forest in it, and he thought about those trees. And so he really kind of changed his path a little, made a little broader path. And then he came to a fertile place where he thought, this is a wonderful plot of land I could plant. And so I'll take this in. But slowly, of course, the day began to fade, and he realized that he wasn't going to get back to the starting place. And so he began to run, and he ran, and he ran, and he just completely wore himself out. In fact, he finally got to the starting place, but he fell over dead from exhaustion. So the question is, how much land does a man need? 6 feet, the amount of land that it takes to bury someone. And everything else would be left behind. And I'm saying to you and me, we have probably, maybe some of us own a home. Maybe some of us, for instance, own a car. We've got some jewelry. We've got some other things. We maybe not consider ourselves, but all of us have something. And none of us will have anything at the end of life. Somebody wryly said once, they don't have any luggage racks on hearses. And that's the truth. You can't take anything with you. You will simply, as the Bible says in one place, you know, you are from earth, and to earth you will return. So all those things that you possess, now you maybe can have a will that turns those over to somebody else, but not to you. The pharaohs of Egypt were foolish enough to build those pyramids, and in it they put all kinds of things that they were going to take to the afterlife. Of course, they didn't take a bit of things. In fact, eventually most of those graves were robbed by robbers who said, well, somebody could get in here and walk away with all of these possessions. And fortunately, there's still some of those possessions that weren't robbed. But the point is, we have been blessed with material things. And we, in turn, are to use those material things for the glory of God. Those people that are praised in the Bible for their generosity. I think of Barnabas, who was that companion to Paul. It was during the time when they had begun the church on the day of Pentecost. And there were many people there that had gathered there for that celebration. But they were among those converted by that powerful sermon of Peter. It says 3,000 people. And so here they were at the beginning of the church. Well, somebody had to step up and say, well, these people are going to need a little help. And sure enough, Barnabas had a plot of land in the island of Cyprus. He sold it and gave it to the church. And so there's times and times again of illustrations of individuals knew that the material things that are given to us, that we are taught to share them. The great story of the widow's mite. And the widow's mite, you recall, only put a little bit in, but Jesus said she gave more than anyone else because that's all she had. And Paul warns about the love of money. You remember the passage over in 1 Timothy 6 and 10. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, which some reaching after have been led astray from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Now sometimes people will say that passage and they'll say, well, money's the root of all evil. Well, no, that isn't what it says. It's number one, it says the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. There's evil, of course, other than money, but money is a cause of a lot of evil. Sometimes it's robbery leads to it. Sometimes it's greed. You might be a little surprised if you go through the Bible, and one of the sins that's very prevalently condemned is greed. The problem is that money is not the end, money is rather a means to an end. It can be used. In fact, money is both good and evil. You might use money in order to help somebody who's in great need. You might use it to do some benevolence toward the church. There's all kinds of ways you could do money. But often we tend to think of money as mine. This is mine, you know. And it's just like that rich farmer. He said, you know, this is great. I've got all these crops. I'm going to, at that time, you know, there's not much mention of banks. But he had an idea. He thought, you know, I can store all this grain and I can eat and drink and be merry. But that night, his soul was required of him. And as God said to him, "Whose all these goods that you have, whose will they be now?" So we are a steward, regardless of whether you have much money or you have, maybe you think of yourself as being somebody who had very little money. But every one of us have material possessions. And God expects us to be stewards of our material possessions, to be managers, because they won't be ours. One day every one of us will face death and all these things that you've accumulated. Somebody will perhaps benefit from them, but you won't. We go to the grave. We begin from the earth. The Genesis story tells us that God took the dust of the ground and made man, and we will go back. And so we are to be stewards of our money, of our material possessions. We're to be managers, because they're not ours forever. Well, we think of that. We start off in a way, and we think, well, here it is. I've got all these. Now I can gather some more and all. Once in a while, I hear of a young man, or maybe a woman as well, who says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be a millionaire. Well, that's the wrong goal in life. There are a lot of things more important than how much money you can accumulate. And to have that, you have allowed the means to become the end. Money is simply a means. The end is the good that you can do with the possessions that you have. I read the story in the first century about those people who evidently had a rather large house, like Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, or some other people that opened they didn't have church buildings in the first century. And so, like in the case of Lydia, she allowed the saints to meet in her home. So there are ways in which those material possessions can be used well. But there are also ways in which your greed is such that with you, the accumulation of money is what's going to count. The accumulation of goods, the home you can build, the car you can drive. And just as God said to the rich farmer, whose will it be now? Well, we're also, and I'm now going to mention two other things that we're stewards. We're stewards of time. When we start off our life, we say it's going to be endless. You know, at age 20 or something like that, we don't. But when you get to be my age, or many of you in this audience, but you begin to realize, well, it's moving toward the end. We better think through this. What we may have sometime. When I experienced the loss of my wife, I thought to myself, well, I'm sure the Lord has something for me to do. I'm going to be bereft. I felt like half of me was gone. But on the other hand, I knew that God was calling me, even at my age, that there was some service that I could perform. So we have time. How long time do you think you have? Well, the average age of America, we are now blessed with a lot of wonderful medical treatments, and so we live longer than, say, people did 50 years ago or even 100 years ago. The average age at death is 80. And by the way, you who are women have a couple of years on us men in that regard. But so we have time. And now, how are we going to spend that time? Are we going to waste it? Because, you know, you're just going to have one life to live. And stop and think about the way you're going to spend time. Well, you know, we spend time taking care of our body, and there's nothing wrong with that. After all, the Bible says, Paul is writing to the Corinthians, he says that the body is a temple of the soul. And so we are to care for our body, but it's mortal. And we might end up with a short life, or we might end up with a life of a long time. Interestingly enough, the man who made the greatest impact on the world was Jesus. And he only lived 33 years. But think of those 33 years and what he did. And today, there are 2 billion people in this world who claim to be Christians and followers of Jesus. So no other man had the impact on the world like Jesus did. And so, as someone has well said, it's not always what counts is the years in your life, but the life that's in your years. And some, I've been blessed to live a long time, and I'm thankful for that. And but all I know is that I was thinking one day, in the calendar of life, where am I? And I had to admit that I'm probably in December in my life. And so as we get older, we begin to realize time is running out. And God expects us to be good stewards of our time. And I want to call to your attention. You may say, well, I'm here at church. Well, that's a good thing to spend your time. And perhaps you have moments of prayer and times of Bible study and all of that. But this judgment scene, the only judgment scene that Jesus painted for us is found over in the 25th chapter of Matthew. And I want to read from that. He said, "The king will say to you, 'Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me.' Then the righteous will answer him, saying, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and gave you drink? When did we see you as a stranger and took you in, or naked and clothed you? Or when did we say you sick in prison and come to you?' And the king will answer and say to them, 'Verily I say to you, insomuch as you did it to one of these, the least of my brethren, you did it to me.'" And then, of course, he turns to the other and points out to them that they did none of these things. So one of the things that we're called upon to do as Christians is to care for our fellow human beings. And I'm struck by, well, for instance, there's a story of Dorcas who had passed away, and You remember Peter then later was to perform the miracle. But when he came into the room, the widows were there, all of them holding up the garments that Dorcas had sewed for them. That, you know, she's not being complimented for a whole lot of things, but that was a wonderful thing about this woman. She was doing good. And remember when Jesus once was pointing out that the two things that are the most important is to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your mind and with all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And some rather proud lawyer said, well, just who is my neighbor? And Jesus once again told a parable. And the parable is the parable of the Good Samaritan. And you remember how that there was a man who had been beaten by robbers. And he had been left for dead. And a priest came by and put my eye on the other side, and a Levite. But a Samaritan. Now, Samaritans were viewed as sort of half-breed Jews. They were looked down on. But this Samaritan saw that man and stopped and put oil and wine in his wounds. And then he took him to an inn. And he said to the innkeeper, I want you to take care of this man. And if you need to spend more money, I'll recompense you when I come back. So then Jesus turned to this lawyer and said, who was the neighbor? And the lawyer had to admit, well, the person who took care of the man who had been beaten by robbers. Jesus said, go and do likewise. So one of the things, we are not only to love God, but we're to love our neighbors. We're to care for people who are poor. The New Testament and the Old Testament as well were always taking care of the poor. James, writing to Christians, said once, pure religion and undefiled before the God and Father is this, to visit the widows and the orphans in their affliction and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Well, in the first century, of course, as any century, orphans are often destitute, but widows were in a particularly vulnerable place because really, there were no occupations. Generally, a widow had to be dependent upon her husband, and when the husband was gone, it was very difficult. So, you remember, Paul took up a collection for the poor in the church at Jerusalem, and there's many instances of that. Have you spent much time that way? Have you looked out after people who are in need? Do you have compassion for the poor or care for the sick? Or maybe I know some people have been wonderful in prison ministries. In the Churches of Christ, there was a doctor by the name of Henry Farrer. He went to Africa and he started a hospital. And today there are literally thousands of people in Nigeria, and now it's gone into Ghana. And so these are people that don't have the freedom to pay for a high-priced doctor. But that is one of the great ministries that's being done by this particular African Christian hospitals. So, Lazarus, the story of Lazarus and the rich man. Lazarus said after death, of course, their situation was switched. Lazarus, the poor beggar, was in Abraham's bosom, and Lazarus looked up from Hades. And it was said that the beggar would have loved to have even had the crumbs that would fall from the rich man's table. So how do you spend your time? We're all having a lot amount of time, Now, one thing about it, we don't know for sure how much allotted time we're going to have. Perhaps we will reach that age of 80. Perhaps we will reach beyond that. I've been fortunate to do that. But it really is a question here. You are a steward of your time. And sometimes, you know, they're just things that people do that nobody knows about. Maybe sending cards to the sick or visiting the sick or doing some other thing. And then, so that's one thing, one way you ought to be a steward is spend your time well, because you have, every one of you have a certain amount of allotted time in your life. And the third thing I want to mention, as you're a steward of, is you're a steward of your talents. Well, I can almost hear somebody say, well, I don't have many talents. Well, stop and think about that a little. I mentioned the fact of Barnabas. He had material. He happened to have a plot of land in Cyprus. I'm sure he must have gotten some dividends from it, but he decided to give it all to the Jerusalem church and take care of those people who had been converted there. And Barnabas, one other thing that I want to mention about Barnabas, you know, he was a second to Paul. He was not quite as demanding, dynamic as Paul was, but he was the man in Antioch when he realized there was perhaps a need of more preaching to the Gentiles. He thought, I know a man in Tarsus that can do that job. And he goes to Tarsus and brings Paul to Antioch. And you know the rest of the story, the great three missionary journeys that Paul took, the fact that he was the most impactful person in planning the church and preaching the gospel. Even was willing to, he didn't ask for money. He was a tent maker, and he would go into a city and he would begin to make tents which were in need, and then suddenly in that place he would be preaching the story of Jesus. And so whether he was at Philippi or Corinth or Ephesus, the same story was repeated. Suddenly, even with great persecution, he nevertheless planted churches. So, what are your talents? Well, as I said, Dorcas, who knew how to sew, and she sewed for the poor. And I know of other people who have talents stop and think about things you can do. Sometimes some people begin to, you know, is to plant a church, is to go into mission work. But there's also the possibility, Paul, a lot of times in the church at Corinth, some people were a little proud and they'd say, well, I can speak in tongues much better than this other person who doesn't speak in tongues, or I can do this, I can do that. And Paul would say, you know, we're like the human body. Would the eye say to the ear, I don't need you? Or would the hand say to the foot, I'm more important than you are? No, we have a human body, and we pretty soon find out that there's a lot of parts of that human body that are pretty important. There are organs inside our body that we are, if something goes wrong with your liver or your kidneys, that's a little more dangerous than if something's wrong with your hand. So Paul was saying, in effect, we're all part of the body. We all have something we can do. And it may not be the spectacular thing, but it might be the thing that makes the real long-range impact. the word of kindness you pay to somebody, the thoughtfulness that you care for people, the grandmother who steps in and something has gone wrong with the family and she takes care of the grandchildren. Well, I can name all those things. You could too, so I want you to think about that. I want you to say to yourself, okay, I'm a steward of my time. I'm a steward of my talents. I'm a steward of my material possessions. That's what I am. As Paul would write and say, it is required of a steward to be found faithful. When I was president of a college, I wasn't, you know, didn't own the college. I reported, I had a contract. And I knew what being a steward was. I knew that it was, that I was under the direction of a board of trustees. And that's, well, you are God's steward. And we are required to be found faithful. And so your stewardship, yes, I'm glad you're here this morning, but you are servants who are to go out and, as Jesus would describe us, we're the light of the world. We're the salt of the earth. And that salt, you know, salt is not a blazing thing that you see immediately, but it has power. And so you have power. And you are God's steward, and it is required of you to be found faithful. It is required of me to be found faithful. So let us recognize what important stewardships we have, and let us be indeed stewards that will be found faithful. Thank you. Will we stand and sing? Okay.
Who at the door is standing? Patiently calling here. Entrance is in demanding.
Who is the voice I hear?
Me.